Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, episode 50. I'm your host, Nick Ortego. Lissa has some tips on how to keep students motivated until the end of the school year. Educators are pushing back against net neutrality. And whose idea was it to bring a tiger to a Florida prom? Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week, we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week, we chat with the COO of GeoGebra, the company that has made amazing math apps that are used all over the world and are free for students. Hello, everybody. Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined by teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt and education data expert Russ Davis of School Status. Lissa, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Russ, how's it going over there?
Going fantastic, man.
So, Lissa, is it Laurel or Yanny?
Oh, I've seen that.
I haven't clicked
on it, though. Everybody's doing
that. Are you ready?
That.
All right, tell me what you hear.
Laurel.
Laurel.
Laurel. Laurel.
Like Laurel four times.
Yeah, you heard Laurel. I hear Laurel. Russ?
I just listened to it for the first time this morning, and my office was abuzz with it, right? So we use Slack. So everybody was talking about it, and I was like, what the hell are they talking about? And so I played it just a second ago, and I hear Laurel as well. And frankly, I think that people that hear Yanny are crazy people.
Well, so my wife, she hears Yanny, and she thinks I'm crazy, and she thinks I'm like lying to her. Like, you do not hear Laurel. You're just saying that. It's the whole like blue dress, gold dress thing. It has to do with frequencies and what we hear, and it's different.
Yeah, I heard if you hold your phone away from you, then you'll hear Yanny. If you have it up close, you'll hear Laurel.
Well, I heard that, but I have earphones on now, and I'm still hearing Laurel. And then I had played it on my phone last night, and I don't know. Anyways,
that
it'll probably be old news.
Very clearly, Laurel.
It'll be old news by the time a lot of folks probably listen to this, but it's just crazy. But let's go ahead and we'll jump into the teacher's lounge. Lissa, what do you know?
Well, it's that tough time of year where everybody's just crawling across the finish line. You know, there's all these funny memes about parents packing lunch the first week of school, and it's like this amazing healthy lunch, and then it'll be a photo of a piece of bread with a raw carrot stuck in the middle of it for the last week of school, and you know, teachers are certainly crawling, but also students are actually having a tough time just sticking with it to the end of the year. So the Washington Post has a story, you know, that talks to several different teachers to just give some tips of how to change learning in the classroom to make it go in a different direction to where it's maybe more of a review, but also a lot more movement involved. So I'm just going to go through a few tips. If anybody has the end of the year how to get over it.
What's the secrets?
Well, one thing, this was not in the Washington Post.
Oh, this is Alyssa
tip. This is Alyssa tip.
Okay. It's Alyssa list.
No, some of these are from them, but I'm adding mine to the list.
You shouldn't tell us, but we should try to guess which one's your tips and which one's
that's
the Washington
it.
Post.
Okay, all right, fine. I'll
just
do
throw
that.
Throw one at us.
Okay, taking field trips. That's in no apparent order. Taking field trips was mentioned as, you know, a way to get out of the classroom, go review something that's been, go to a museum.
I think that's good.
Go to a work site.
That sounds like a Lissa thing.
Nope.
Oh, wow.
One teacher brings in some TED Talks at the end of the year and has students kind of in different areas of science, you know, delve into a TED Talk. And
so basically, they're just like done teaching. They're like, listen to this guy.
Yeah.
I think they may be phoning in at that point.
No. I like TED Talks.
I'm joking. Clearly, that one wasn't from me. That was probably a dead giveaway. You could talk about what the next year is going to bring, especially if you're at the end of a campus. You know, like this is the last stop on this certain campus and your students are moving forward to middle school or to a different location. That's something that you can do is just kind of open up a forum and speak with your children about what to expect next year. What's it going to be like in sixth grade?
Whose idea is that?
I think that's Lissa's.
Maybe that's mine.
Okay. That's a great idea.
I think it's a good idea.
It is. I do think, especially when you're teaching children, that are moving on into a different math subject, you know, especially in the middle school grades. And as you transition into high school, they want to know, well, what is geometry like? Or what is algebra going to be like? Or, you know, what can I expect at that other campus? And so I think it's really important for the children to know the expectations, for the teachers to say, here's what I know you need to know. And also in the Washington Post, there was a teacher that said you should have kind of an end of the year summary for each child to express their strengths and weaknesses, things that they might want to work on, maybe a book to read over the summer, but also just some stuff that this is going to hit you head on next year. So this is something you need to know as a weakness and make sure you perk up when it's introduced next year. So that definitely takes a lot of time from teachers at the end of the year. So maybe people won't love that suggestion as much. But I do think that's a good one, is to just kind of teach and kind of direct each child as an individual, as this is what you're going to be up against next year.
Right.
A quiz bowl, a kind of fun review.
That's fun.
Those are fun.
I love those.
You know, there's tons of Jeopardy games that you can buy on Teachers Pay Teachers. There's lots of review Jeopardy games that you can just have games where you're reviewing and you've split them up into teams, and that's fun to play at the end of the year. There's lots that you can
I'll
do.
I'll take the rapist for $1,000.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot believe.
That's the therapist.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
You think you're pretty smart, don't you, Trebek?
Yeah, your accent, Sean Connery accent's way better than mine, Russ.
Okay. Okay, I have no comment. So yeah, that's about it. I mean, obviously, it's the grind. It's tough. I think it's fair if teachers are struggling to the end of the year for the teachers to know that, guess what, the parents are struggling to get to the end of the year. And I think
Everyone's
it's fair
struggling.
For the parents and the teachers to acknowledge that the kids are struggling to
awesome.
Get to the end of the year.
All right. Well, good stuff, Lissa. Russ, appreciate it. Russ, what do you know? I think, you know what? There's a vote up in Washington, D.C. today, and I think it lines up right with your topic.
There is. Yeah, absolutely. So I think we talked in a previous episode about net neutrality. And basically, last December, the FCC voted to repeal net neutrality, which basically was a set of rules meaning that every packet on the internet, regardless of who created the packet, has to be treated largely the same way. So, you know, I know everyone that has a cell phone has kind of seen like streaming packages on their cell phone, right? So like, if you like to stream movies, then this is the package for you. And if you don't like to stream movies, this is the package for you.
Right.
And, you know, and what this says is, you know, everything has to be handled uniformly. And I think, you know, anyone that's ever dealt with a large cable provider can understand that those guys are looking to do anything to prevent from being just what they call dumb pipe, right? So like just a, you know, a connection to the internet that you can just flip and switch and have somebody else, you know, that's kind of the worst case scenario for a bandwidth provider, because there's no value add and there's no, you know, it's kind of a race to the bottom from a money perspective. Well, that's exactly what the FCC was requiring folks to do, is that, you know, if you wanted to download Netflix, for instance, there wasn't an upcharge for that.
Right.
Or there wasn't a way for Netflix to pay for a fast lane into your institution or into your school or district
or whatever.
So
everyone got, you know, as good as access as they possibly could get of Netflix, is what you're saying.
That's right. And more likely, Microsoft couldn't come out with an education data analytics product and pay to have it delivered over a higher class of service than, say, a small company like School Status. Right. So from my perspective, it makes a lot of sense to have net neutrality rules in place. And there was a lot of folks that the FCC commissioner did a really great job of making it about, you know, the internet, you know, really doesn't need this kind of regulation. But I really disagree if that content providers, you know, the way that AT&T and Comcast, who are really the two big ones, keep buying up smaller companies, you're really going to be left with getting internet access from one provider. And so the article I was reading from EdSurge was talking about how K-12 schools really aren't in a strong position. You know, the FCC should get into this for schools, because schools aren't really in a strong position to tell bandwidth providers what they can and can't do, right?
Right.
So let's say that AT&T, who is our largest provider in my state and most small, you know, southern states, let's say that AT&T said, hey, we're going to start charging you extra for streaming, right? So we noticed that your district's doing a lot of streaming and we're going to start charging you guys extra. There's really nothing to stop them from doing that other than regulation. Now, you could say, I'm not going to do business with you, but all they have to do is say, okay.
Or and I guess then, they could say, you know, we're going to charge you extra to stream Netflix, but we're not going to charge you extra to stream PBS. Like, right?
That's right.
They could like set up deals and kind of pick and choose.
That's it. And ultimately, that's a bad thing, right? Because who you purchase your internet from should not be in the business of telling you what content you should watch or pay extra to watch, which is essentially what they do. When somebody says they use price controls, they're trying to change your behavior, right? By definition.
Yeah, I like it too. Like if Walmart controlled the roads and they built all the roads, so they went to Walmart, but not the local grocery store.
That's right. And likewise, we don't let Walmart pay extra to build a road, especially to Walmart, right?
Right.
For that very reason. Like, we just don't allow it to happen. They shouldn't be in that business. It should be, you know, a pretty neutral thing. So, you know, I will disclaim that I'm very biased against anybody that would speak out against net neutrality. I feel very strongly about it because it impacts the business that we're in. And let's say that somebody starts saying, well, hey, look, you know, we're AT&T. Right. And we sell, you know, servers on demand. We sell all these things that Amazon does. Right. And if you buy it from AT&T, then we will make it way faster than we make Amazon's content. Right. Mm-hmm. What's to stop them from doing that? That is a very likely scenario that if you've studied anything about, you know, like, for instance, Comcast, they were throttling BitTorrent. For years, people were, you know, downloading whatever through BitTorrent, and the content of it is none of the provider's business, frankly. But they were downloading lots of things, and then eventually there was a thing with Netflix as well. I used to have Comcast back in the day when Netflix was not, you know, Netflix said, "We'll give you these streaming servers to put on your network, so we don't have to have bandwidth, you know, traverse your network, like traverse your internet links." And Comcast said, "No, you need to pay us." And so these guys are if left to their own devices, they're bad actors, in my opinion. And this is why it's very important that the Senate vote today to reverse and basically put it into legislation to take it out of the FCC's hands. So it's not subject to political appointees, basically, which is what the FCC is staffed with. It's subject to people that are directly elected. And so anyway, that's just my opinion on it. The article goes into great detail about it. But essentially, schools, if you only have one or two bandwidth providers and your bandwidth providers are AT&T and Comcast, you don't have a choice. You don't. And so it needs to be instituted into law so that it's very clear.
Yeah. And from what I understand, it's these school organizations. They've kind of all teamed up and they're trying to speak with one cohesive voice, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. COSEN is one. State Ed Tech, SETDA, which is a State Ed Tech Directors Association, and then the Library Association, who, believe it or not, are some of the largest, proponents of free speech, right? So when, you know, somebody tries to pull a Fahrenheit 451 and pull books, these guys are the ones that speak out against it. So I think it's a very powerful lobby, and I hope it works.
Have you guys heard about the, it's prom season? Mm-hmm. And prom's kind of getting a little ridiculous, right?
It's over the top.
It's a little over the top.
It's what the kids would say. It's extra.
Okay. It's extra.
Yeah.
Well, there was an extra prom over in Florida, and they had a jungle theme prom. And someone at the Christopher Columbus High School thought it was a good idea.
Sounds like a bad idea, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm just going to say, jungle theme, not your best theme for prom.
Well, they thought it was a good idea to bring a bunch of animals, a lemur, two macaws, an African fox, and a tiger, and have the tiger in an iron cage at the prom.
And is this a Saudi prince who did this?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Where did they get these animals?
You know, it makes me ask, like, where are the adults on this one? I get, like, kids being like, you know what would be cool? We had a tiger in a cage. And then this is where the parent steps in, or the teacher or the administrator goes, yeah, that sounds really cool, but this is why it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen. The tiger showed up. There were disco lights, laser lights. The tiger looked very uncomfortable. There's a video of it. It's like, you know, pacing back and forth. Zoo experts have been brought in and be like, this tiger is visually stressed.
Yeah.
So they got the tiger out of there, I think, because some people didn't like it. But school administrators defended the school's decision to bring in wildlife and said the hotel approved the visit. Oh, well, the hotel approved it.
Okay.
Well, that's good. The hotel, who you're paying, said it was okay for you to bring live animals. Let me tell you who didn't say it was okay. The hotel's insurance provider.
Yeah, right.
That person never was consulted about having live animals around potentially,
right,
you know, bad situations.
And so, and that just shows you it's twofold problem. It's one, is it a danger? And then apparently the school administrators were quoted as saying two Miami-Dade police officers were present the entire time, et cetera. You know, that's.
And those guys didn't say, hey, let's get animal control on this and figure out what's what.
A lot of times those officers might be paid, you know, on the side. They might be doing extra duty or you know, making overtime. So, you know, they don't want a controversial situation.
Well, and if they're there in case something goes wrong, I mean, what would that be?
Yeah,
if the tiger got out, if Mike Tyson's tiger got out, like, I mean, what would the police officer do except for something really fatal? So that stinks, you know?
Yeah.
What's funny is there was an episode of Vice Principals on HBO, which, by the way, is very R-rated. And if you're not into that, don't watch it. But where somebody brought a tiger, their school mascot was the tiger, and the tiger got out. So apparently whoever thought this was a great idea doesn't watch a lot of HBO because there was a tiger that got out and it was not a funny thing. So
yeah, I mean, you know, LSU has a tiger mascot and they have this massive...
Well, he's treated better than I am, though,
exactly.
Mike the Tiger.
Like, I mean, this is massive cage. I've seen it and like people go and they'll visit it on the campus and stuff. But this is a stunt. And it just disappoints me.
So we're kind of focusing on the tiger, but what about the lemur or whatever else? Like, where were those guys? Just walking around?
That is a great question, and I do not have that answer because I was kind of looking through the article myself and trying to figure it out. The whole thing was reported in the Miami Herald. I'll link to it in the show notes if anyone wants to go see the video of this tiger.
Let me tell you, I'm giving 10-1 odds that one of these animals was stolen and is somebody's closet right now.
You might be right. Are you guys ready for the bright idea?
Yeah.
Sure.
Have you heard of GeoGebra?
Yes.
You have?
Yes, but I think it might have been from you, actually.
No, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But anyways.
It's like an app, a math app.
They have several math apps.
Okay, that's
one similar to another application that we've talked about on the show. Russ, you remember we talked about Desmos. I think it was the graphing calculator.
Yeah, sure.
GeoGebra also makes one, and then they also make like augmented reality apps and stuff. But the coolest thing is, this is all open source. This is free for any student, and they apparently have huge penetration in Europe, and they're really starting to grow here in the United States. And I had a good long conversation with them about their business model and so forth. So super interesting.
You know, I remember these. I was trying to figure out where I'd heard of them from, but I went to an EdTechX Europe last year. And I'll be going back this year, but they were mentioned there, and I think they even had a booth there. So these guys are doing some really cool work.
Our guest in today's Bright Ideas segment works for GeoGebra. GeoGebra has created mathematics software for geometry, algebra, spreadsheets, graphics, statistics, and calculus. And their applications work on Apple and Android devices, as well as Windows, Mac, Chromebook, and Linux. Stephen Joel is the COO and CFO of GeoGebra, and he joins us today. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having us.
You guys have made some pretty amazing software. What drives your team? Why create these math apps?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those labors of love, actually, and we've all sort of come from a teaching background, and GeoGebra actually, as a name, is a mashup of geometry and algebra, which is not always evident straight off the bat, and it's actually pronounced in as many different ways as there are languages and countries around the world. But it actually started, it was started as a master's degree project, like many great ideas of a friend of mine way back in the early 2000s. And then he built it out through his PhD and then put it up in the cloud and online. And suddenly it got a little bit of focus and attention. And his name is Marcus Hohenwarter. He's now based in Austria. His idea was to bring together the best of what for fee or cost-based math tools offered students and teachers and make something that would be free and available to students everywhere in the world. And by proxy of that, basically level the playing field. So if you are a kid in Mumbai or, you know, a professor in New York, it didn't matter. You could have access to the same super powerful math tools and resources and community as each of those people without any disparity in access.
So Stephen, I'm glad you said that because the actual product, one of them, of many that you guys have, is basically a really sophisticated graphing calculator that you can use on a desktop or even an iPhone. And that's an area, an industry that is really due for some disruption. Texas Instruments has kind of, you know, controlled that market for I'll just go ahead and say it, far too long. And, you know, here you guys are coming in and offering this for free, right?
Yeah, you know, and, you know, I have to say that, you know, that's, it's certainly something we're aware of. And you know, coming from, again, the core vision of the organization, because we're a .org, and that is that, you know, it's about leveling the playing field, making sure that, you know, there's no barriers to being able to learn and explore mathematics by cost or by location or by context. But, you know, that said, you know, Texas Instruments and the Casios of this world and all of those great calculators that are out there, and we couldn't have lived without them. And I'm not sure we can live without them yet. Who knows? So we're the way we see it is that it's a complex landscape of available mathematics tools in the world, as it should be. You know, like, you know, we love the idea of choice in restaurants, in education, in schools, in politics, and the same applies, I think, in this case. So we delight in you know, the having a complex landscape. In fact, you know, so TI remains, you know, one of those important calculators, and that's not to, you know, undermine us, because of course we are too now, and we're a really tiny organization with a, you know, what seems to be a growing impact in the world, and that's pretty exciting to be part of that legacy.
Right. And so if somebody's looking for your applications, you know, you can go to your website, which is it just geogebra.org, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you can find our calculators there.
Right, so you can find them there. But now, you know, in the world of apps, you can just easily go to your app store on your iPhone and type in y'all's name, and you see multiple apps. And one's an augmented reality app, which we'll get to in a minute. You've got this, you know, one that's focused on geometry. And then, of course, the graphing calculator. And so is there really any limitations to, let's just start with the graphing calculator. Is there any limitations in the classroom? Is there any reason students can't use that instead of a TI?
Probably no limitations at all, in fact, no. It can do everything that your classic calculator can do. And we might even go so far as to say even more, you know, because it has the, you know, the ability of screen size. You know, it's a bit like when, you know, iPhone came out and transformed the phone just through screen size and resolution. What you can do and see in a GeoGebra graphing calculator or a 3D or, as you mentioned, the augmented reality app, it's pretty profound and pretty impactful.
One thing that I really liked about your app, and I don't know how common this is, I haven't seen this, but your graphing calculator actually has an exam mode. And essentially what it does is it uses some features kind of that a lot of people probably didn't realize were built into an iPhone or an Android device. And it locks the screen down, I guess, and a teacher would know if a student maybe was, you know, jumping into Google to do some extra work while they're taking the test. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And yeah, that's something we've been really exploring the last couple of years. This idea of providing a mechanism for schools or even whole districts. We're doing some testing with some districts in the US right now around how we can, you know, meet compliance regulations with, you know, the exam bodies, so that, you know, a school or a district could actually allow students to use their own device or, you know, devices at the school. And then as you're suggesting earlier, you know, potentially avoid having the costs of expensive calculators on the side, and then use those same tools that they're using, you know, during the formative learning and assessment, which are often, you know, the tablets or computers in their classrooms, and have those same devices as the tool that they use during their exams. And that's the idea of the exam mode, is to provide that secure environment. There's still a little ways to go there, because you know there's always that, you know, that issue of that question of, you know, the current policies and regulations around examinations are pretty tight and pretty, but we're getting there. I think people are opening minds and starting to work more sort of fluidly with the idea of apps and devices as being able to provide that service.
Now, you really are a global organization. Where are you guys seeing the most penetration with your products?
Well, you know, we started in Europe. We spent a bit of time in the US years ago, and Marcus, the founder, was doing some PhD work down in Florida, but really our home base is Europe. So we, you know, anywhere you go in Europe, you know, you walk into any math class and you'll see GeoGebra being used. And it's even aligned with most of the, you know, national curriculum standards across most European countries. But we also are absolutely now kind of huge in the US, which is really exciting for us. And one of the reasons why I, you know, moved back from the UK out here to the Pacific time zone was to be closer to our North American and also Latin American community, which is growing rapidly. So we've got, you know, we are used in every country worldwide, but we like to think about our sort of our community as being a global community, and Yeah, and the U.S. is an incredibly important part of that, too.
But let's talk about the augmented reality app, because I downloaded it and I tried it out and I didn't really know what I was doing because I'm out of school for a little while, but it looked really cool because like I was basically like pointing it at a surface on my table and seeing these living objects almost through my phone screen. But like, how is that used in a math class?
Yeah, it's a whole new landscape. I'm so excited about it. I think a lot of people are too, but you know, it's undefined territory, you know, and through the social media, we start to see tweets coming in now with, you know, teachers, you know, showing, you know, students working with augmented reality on their own devices, you know, building objects and putting them on their desktops in their classrooms. You know, so what does that mean for workflow? What does it mean if, you know, students, I mean, here's a little analogy that I like, and I kind of imagine is going to start happening out there. You've got your student, you know, your average kid, sitting at the breakfast table, you know, on their phone, you know, eating their cereal, and their parents, you know, chasing them along to finish their cereal and say, you know, get off your phone. You know, shouldn't you be doing your math homework? And a student, you know, you'll hand the phone up to dad or mom, and it points the phone at the table and sees this object, you know, hovering above the table, which, you know, suddenly I think, you know, makes sense to a parent around what actually those functions are that their kids are working on at school. They're real objects. Mathematics is a real object. Every function is something that's real in the world. And that's what augmented reality is going to do for mathematics. It's going to suddenly make it make sense for everybody that those functions that you see on the page are actually three-dimensional, two-dimensional objects that are all around you and everything.
Have you ever received any feedback directly from a teacher or a student, a story that kind of really sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, no, I think that's one of those things that we feel happens on a daily basis. There's almost too much to even kind of convey. I mean, here's one story I can share. Is I was recently at a math conference down in Mexico, and there was a delegate who came up all the way from Colombia to connect with the Latin American GeoGebra and math community. And Colombia, you know, is an emerging economy. You know, it's a powerhouse. You know, with great potential for the future. And the growth in mathematics use and GeoGebra use in Colombia is kind of incredible. It's like in the triple digits.
Wow, I did not know that.
Oh yeah, I know. It's remarkable. Latin America is just really loving, you know, dynamic mathematics and technology. It's wonderful to see this whole kind of, you know, growth in engineering and science and technology down there. So when you meet a teacher like that and they come up to you and they, and I also see them at first hand because I see the stats and the metrics coming up in Latin America and in places like Colombia. And I'm like, I'm so incredibly excited to meet someone from Colombia directly and him tell me his stories about what's going on there. And so, you know, you can kind of get a sense of how, you know, incredibly impactful that is because we work in the virtual world every day. But, you know, when we actually get to be face to face with people around the world that are doing amazing things in math, that's what really is exciting.
So I got to ask a question that I think anyone listening would probably be wondering. Here you are, you guys made these amazing products. They're basically open source out there for anybody. Yeah. What's your business model?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's sort of one of those, you know, we were all teachers, academics, you know, with day jobs. And this was something we kind of decided we were going to, you know, support and sustain as the community grew. The business model is quite simple that, our direct non-commercial community worldwide, and that's all of these millions and millions of students and teachers and government agencies, etc., state departments, and you know, we work with them if they're an individual or, you know, a state department at the same level. We'll provide the same level of support and service at absolutely no cost. There's no, you know, freemium, no upsell, no registered, you know, data or what have you. We don't collect any data on any of these end users. So then the question is, well, how do we sustain this vision, this value, this vision of values for, you know, making mathematics accessible without, you know, advertising and sales? So fundamentally, the model is that we then license our engine, you know, as you would say it, or, you know, the API, the engine, to commercial partners. So GeoGebra is free for non-commercial users, but if you're a commercial entity or partner, then you pay us a small license fee, and we have these little tiny, it's like a little micro economy we work on. So we work on very large economies of scale. So we work with most of the big publishers, lots of great startups, incredible edu platforms worldwide. And so we are kind of like this engine behind the scenes that powers all of these resources and or provides calculator services. And that's how we keep the lights on, and that's how we fund the .org and make sure that we can maintain this vision of providing this great software, you know, to students and teachers, you know, free of charge worldwide.
Well, again, the product is GeoGebra. I guess, are you guys on Twitter as just GeoGebra? Is that kind of your hashtag handle?
Yeah, you can find us at GeoGebra.
Steve and Joel, are you ready for our pop quiz?
Yeah, let's fire away, Nick. Let's have it.
All right. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
Yeah, well, yeah, math, of course. Yeah, maybe some art as well. So, yeah, math and art.
Why art? Because my co-host is actually is in the arts. So.
Oh, well, you know, art is, you know, that kind of free expression and creativity. And without creativity, we really have nothing, you know. So freedom to explore. And mathematics is about that. It's about exploring and playing. And I think that's how we think about art, is that's one of the only subjects you get to do that in. But really, it should be every subject.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Maybe, you know, empowering a sense of freedom, you know, in every child, you know, so that they, you know, they can be disciplined when they're, you know, sitting down in their classrooms and rather focused on their studies. But when the bell rings and they're out at recess or at playtime, that, you know, they're kids and they're free to play and explore and take some risks out there.
What does every child deserve?
Love.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
Your kids are smart. I think that's it. You know, I've been a teacher, and I think kids are incredibly smart and incredibly fast in their thinking and pacey with technology. So it's tough to keep up.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
Collaboration and collegiality, probably, I think. Yeah, support. You know, that's all you need, is to have a great community.
Which teacher changed your life?
I could name him and her as well, but I won't. But I think about grade 4, and I also think about grade 10. And there's those critical moments in your education where you encounter those very special teachers who really, you know, have that vested interest in their students, and you can tell when that happens.
And what did they do that stuck with you?
You know, I think it comes back to those things I mentioned earlier, is that they love their students, they love their subject. And they're passionate, and they believe in freedom and autonomy, and they empower, you know, students. Even if, you know, you're a student that's off task, not necessarily saying that was necessarily me, but all students can be. So I think that's what it is. It's that willingness to, you really trust that the student's there for the right reasons.
And last question should be an interesting one for someone in your field of software, but pen or pencil?
All right. Yeah, I love a pencil, of course.
All right. Steve and Joel, again, we appreciate it. The product is GeoGebra at GeoGebra.org or in your app store. We appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Nick. It's been a real pleasure.
That's going to do it for this episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or a comment, remember you can always email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and hit that subscribe button, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismiss. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed!